Hey, dear listener, Anthony here. Before we hop into the show, I wanted to let you know about an incredible new resource we just released, The 5 Rules of Investing. Dan and I are huge advocates of modeling the behaviors of the people who have done what you hope to do. And who better to model when it comes to investing than legendary investors like Warren Buffett, Howard Marks, and Ray Dalio? This free ebook breaks down the simple time-tested strategies of billionaire real estate investors that you can use to take your investing to the next level. So head over to InvictusMultifamily.com and grab your ebook today. All right, now let's hop into the show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. We're going to do a little blast to the past. We're going to take a trip down memory lane. We're going to revisit an episode that we did over 2 years ago, which was 8 Millionaire Habits. This time we're gonna address the 8. We're gonna share those with you, so don't worry, you don't have to go listen to the old one. But then we're gonna share some new habits, maybe some new ones that we've picked up over the last 2 years. See what's changed in our routines, because I know my routine has changed a little bit. So curious, what do you think? What do you think we're gonna uncover in here? Because I haven't looked at these in years.
I don't know. I mean, they're all good habits. We got a list from Reed. These days we're going to get you a mic, Reed, but they're all good. I was trying to think, like, what do I do that's new? I know there's some stuff, but I'm going to have to noodle on it a little bit here and see what comes up.
Because
A lot of these things are just, they're not necessarily like intentional habits where I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this thing to be a millionaire. It's like, they're just behavioral traits that kind of start and you notice like, hey, this actually is, you know, yielding some pretty good results in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's kick it off here. Number one, we'll just go through this list pretty quickly and just kind of say like, yay, nay, still doing it, still not doing it, pivot. Couple in here, I'm kind of curious because I don't know how, I haven't re-listened to the episode, so I don't know how it was worded, but number one was reading more specifically. Mm. You still reading?
You know, I do, but I have to say, if we did this 2 years ago, I'd have to say my reading has decreased a little bit and I've got more audiobooks in the equation just because of the baby component. It's a lot easier to get the books in on the fly while I'm out and about because I feel like a jerk sitting there staring at a book with my kid looking at me like, hello, pay attention to me. So a lot of the times I used to read would be like in the evenings or over the weekend, which is now kind of like cocoa time. So it's more audiobooks, but I'm still consuming information from books. Maybe it's just more audiobooks these days. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these days I'm reading less and less. I'm reading a lot of the same stuff over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I'm reading pretty broadly, so a lot more broadly than I probably was 2 years ago. I'm reading a lot of biographies right now, a lot of history, and a lot of science. I'm just rereading some Richard Dawkins. So reading a lot still, but reading a little bit more broadly. But either way, I still think like filling up that information take like is super important. So I think reading, still a core habit. Exercise. Do you still exercise?
I do.
Kind of look like you let yourself go.
Same answer as before, honestly.
Listening to more workouts these days?
I'm listening to people work out on YouTube and count. No, I would say that my life has changed in that there's just less hours in the day to get all the things done. And so these days it's, 3 to 4 times a week for like 30 to 40 minutes. Or I think 2 years ago it was more than that. I think it was a good hour or so, probably 5 to 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. So, but that's more of a baby thing than like a intentional change on my part. But I will say it is more efficient. If you got to get it in 30 or 40 minutes, you're not going to be dicking around doing whatever. Like you're in there, you do your thing, you get out and you cut the fluff.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Thinking back 2 years ago, I'm probably working out way more than I was then.
This is like a new thing for you. I've been doing it for 2 decades. So
what's that, working out?
Yeah. You made a pretty big shift because when we met, I wouldn't say you were unhealthy, but you weren't like hitting the gym on the regular. Mm-hmm. You were doing some things, but since then it's been more intentional workouts, more sport. Like that's been a pretty dramatic shift, I'd say, over the last 3 years for you.
Yeah. So it's coming, like when we first met, what's interesting is like in 2019, 2020, like right before that, I had pinched a nerve in my spine that like while I was rock climbing and it had lingered for so long, causing a lot of issues, and it made it very hard to like maintain that same level of output that I had been doing before that. And in the last few years, now that my back is healed, I'm feeling good again. It's been awesome. So exercise is still number uno
Numero uno. Yeah, I don't play Uno, so I don't know how that game goes.
You don't speak Spanish.
I don't speak the Espanol. another habit is finding mentors. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I'd say this one ramped up for me. I wouldn't say, not intentionally ramped up. I've just accumulated more in the last 2 years. I'm trying to think who I would have had 2 years ago. I kind of guess, but yeah, I've definitely, I'd say, bumped that up in the priority list as I find those people. Really making sure that they are a big part of what I'm doing, because it is, there's been so much value added in the last 2 years from those individuals in my life. It's insane. Like thinking about how I would have dealt with certain circumstances without them, it's a nightmare to try to imagine it. So infinitely valuable. Can't emphasize this one enough.
Yeah, and the thing with mentors that I think a lot of younger people specifically get wrong is they think that it's like this really official relationship. And in my experience, like, I've never really had an official mentor. I just have people who are further down the road than me who pick up the phone when I call. That's it. Like, and in the last couple of years, the thing that's really grown is less of like those guys who are like a billion steps down the road, and more people who are like maybe peers or just slightly further ahead. And I've been learning a lot from those guys and gals, because they're solving a lot of the same problems in real time that we're solving, or maybe they have just solved it. So I've been getting a lot of benefit out of that, for sure.
Yeah, I should qualify this, because this is important. I'm not talking about people that I have gone up to and said, will you be my mentor / paid? These are just organic relationships that evolved into a mentorish type thing. Mm-hmm. One of them has been memorialized by a consulting arrangement, which is great. And the other one is, you know, pseudo memorialized with a board member seat, so to speak. But yeah, none of these were like, hey, will you be my mentor? Great. I'll pay you $1,000 a month or whatever. None of that.
That never works, by the way, people. No. Never go to somebody and ask them, will you be my mentor? That doesn't work.
Yeah. And if you're lucky, I think you're lucky if you find a good coach. Usually these things are more organic, and they're typically not paid.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never paid for a mentor. I paid for coaches. And like the difference there for me, I guess, is like the coach is somebody that I hire for a very particular specific skill set. Mm-hmm. And the mentor is somebody who's just like, let me bounce this idea off of you. Let me get your strategic worldview on this. Yeah. And that's more informative in a lot of cases for strategy rather than tactics. Mm-hmm. But this next one's interesting. This one is return on karma. And my guess is what we were talking about here is making a habit of like putting value out into the world and just trying to do good, because people that do good do good. And so habitualizing, how do I make a process out of doing good in the world? My guess.
Yeah. Yes. I would say this is never something that we've like intentionally said, okay, we're going to be nice guys specifically so we can accrue karma. Like, we've just always kind of naturally behaved this way. It's served us well. And I wouldn't say I've intentionally ramped it up or down. It's just still like a core value that's present in my being. So It's still there, still very important.
Yeah, and this one's not really like a process that you use on a daily basis where it's like, okay, every day from 1 till 2, I execute my return on karma habit. It's not like that.
You're nice for an hour a day. No, it's just a core philosophy. It's just a belief. It's, yeah.
So the next one here is kind of tied to the mentors, is networking. You still out there networking? Still meeting people?
Not the same. I think 2 years ago, we probably were talking about this much differently.
Totally.
Definitely still networking, but not at like the real estate conferences or not at networking events. Yep. It's more so just making sure you're in the right rooms for whatever your goals are. And these days that's a lot different than it used to be. It's still, I mean, relationships are everything. That's one of the most important parts of this business. And I'd say most every business. So that's still a huge focus of my time, but it's just done a little bit differently. 2 years ago, we were doing a lot of conferences. Not that's bad. It's just, you know, I think we've evolved.
Yeah, these days I don't go to events where I don't already know exactly who's going to be there. That's one really big difference. It's like back in the day, we would go to more events where it's like, I don't know who's going to be here. We'll kind of see what kind of springs out of this. Almost like a petri dish of serendipity. But now I look at it as like, I'm not going to an event unless I know exactly who's going to be there and that I want to meet them or hang out with them or have a conversation with them. And so the networking events look very different than they did before. But still, it's all a relationship game. Everything in life is just comes back to relationship.
I will go to social events without knowing who's going to be there. Because then it's like, okay, I've always been served well by opting to go to things that I might, I'm kind of introverted. I prefer to stay at home. And if I get invited to a thing, usually I'm like, oh God, how can I get out of this? But I've almost never been disappointed if I go to a social engagement that someone invited me to. And, you know, maybe I have fun. This is almost always with my wife, but I'm always surprised by how many times I'll meet people I never expected to meet. And I leave with what most people would want to leave with from a networking event. Mm. So there's no networking events I go to, but I do try to make myself say yes to more just social events because you never know. Worst case scenario, you have some fun and you interact with humans.
But yeah.
A lot of times you do run into people that are like, hey, there's alignment here. I do want to connect with you again sometime.
Yep. And this is, I think, really important is to realize that like networking is just another word for relationship building, which, you know, when you go to your social event, your friend invites you to a party, a dinner party, and there's like six other people there. You probably don't look at that and think that's networking. Yeah, it is networking in the same way that like if you go to like a conference, the reverse is true. You don't go to a conference. A lot of people don't go to conferences thinking, oh, this is relationship building. They go into a thing and this is networking. And so I think that the flip here is to realize that everything is both networking and relationship building. It's like two sides of the same coin. And so I think you can be way more effective when you go to networking events. If you go into it, not thinking I'm going to network, but you go into it thinking I'm going to build relationships. And then the flip of that is when you do hang out with your friends and go to dinners and stuff, just say, hey, this isn't just social, but this is potentially part of my network. Like, how do I continue expanding my web of influence? Yeah.
It's great. My wife is a master at this. It never ceases to amaze me.
She's a pro. Like,
she naturally will somehow know everybody within earshot. If I go to the bathroom and come back, she will have met five new people. I'm like,
she's like, that's Bob, that's Bill, that's literally Brian. They're all with bees.
They're already friends. They've exchanged contact info. And it's really fun on vacation sometimes. We'll kind of see some people at a pool or something. I'm like, I wonder what their story is. Like, I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick. You should find a way to start talking to them. She literally did that when we were on a vacation recently. Came back. It was one of the most entertaining conversations. I would have never talked to these guys. But I literally, in 5 minutes, she had them both over. And these guys were nuts. This is a whole other story. But I
superpower.
It is. I aspire to be like that. I don't know how she does it. She doesn't even try.
That's the funny thing about Liz. Yeah, she doesn't try. It just kind of happens.
It just happens. And
that's the thing is, like, you can tell the people who try too hard. And it's like, this is awkward. You're making it weird.
It's really annoying when I'm trying to get somewhere.
Yeah.
Like walking down the street with this woman. Oh my God, we can't get anywhere. We have to stop six times.
You got to put her on one of those like kid leashes where it's like a leash tied to her.
I just
her
keep hips, walking. And you just, I'm like, you know what? We're going to be late. I know you know these people, but we got to
You know where we're going. I'll meet you there.
Pretty much. Anyways.
All right. Our next habit is what we have written here is decision journal. And I think this is probably touching on having a formalized process for evaluating the quality of your decisions. Because, you know, in an age of infinite leverage, your judgment is the superpower. That's something that Naval says. And it's true, like a good judgment, good decision can have untold power. And so it's really critical that we make good decisions. But then the problem is, like, how do we get quantitatively better at making decisions? And most people, I know for myself, like throughout my 20s, I didn't have like a formalized process for making decisions or reviewing it and being like, was that a good decision? Could I have done it better? Like, and so just having a process, a habit of sitting down before big decisions, even small decisions, like having a process that you go through has been very immensely helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the journal piece is yours. I've never done this with a journal, but I do have a framework I follow, and it's mostly for the big decisions. Because a lot of times in business, like there's times where you're going to have to just make a decision quick and go, and you can't sit there and mull it over for too long. But there's other times, especially with big decisions, where you do need to take the time to think about it and have some kind of process. So my process is giving myself multiple days to think about a thing, because it's amazing how I view something on a Monday may be completely different on Tuesday. And so if I give myself like 3 days or so, maybe four, I will have gotten all of Dan's perspectives. And there's a few different Dans, though. Like Monday Dan might be different than Tuesday, but by the time we get to day three or four, all the Dan perspectives have been kind of aggregated. And I kind of noodle on them, like, okay, this is how I felt about this thing on a positive day. This was me on a tired day. This is me on a ecstatic day, whatever. When I get to that point, I usually kind of narrow it down to what I think I'm going to do. And that's when I ping mentors. Mm. That's where I go to those guys who are, you know, a couple decades ahead of me and say, here's what I'm noodling on. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? And I try to get perspectives from people that don't have a horse in the race, like where there's no emotion, there's no ego, because it's really hard to get your ego out of these types of things or your emotion. But if you get third parties who don't have an emotional attachment to this decision, you're going to get some really valuable feedback. And once I get to that point, sometimes what I leave those conversations with is entirely different than what I thought I was going to be doing. But I'm always leaving those with a high degree of confidence, like very confident, like this is the right decision. Mm. But that takes about a week, sometimes 2 weeks to get to that point. So
yeah, the two through lines here is give yourself time and intention, like, and perspectives, like give yourself multiple perspectives, whether that's your own perspectives from different angles. I think that's really interesting. Mm. And then also bringing in other people so that you can bounce those ideas and see what you're not seeing.
Yeah, and just get the emotion out. Because honestly, that is something where I can look back at a lot of the poor decisions I've made, and they've either been based on like gut or just made too quickly, or they've been driven by emotion / ego. Like I'm never proud of ego-driven decisions, almost never. And third parties, objective third parties who aren't emotionally involved are great at looking at it with an ego-free perspective, which is hugely valuable.
Yeah. All right, next habit, I think this is number 7, is to practice gratitude. And this is interesting. For me, this is maybe one of the biggest shifts. But before I share with you my big shift here, what do you think about this one? Still practice gratitude? You still grateful?
I'm so bad at this. Like Liz helps me stay in a more positive mindset, but I'm typically the type of guy who spends way too much time focused on the problems and putting out the fires, and I forget to think about all the things that are going well. So it's really helpful to do that. One of my other habits that I'll kind of get to in a moment is helpful for that as well. I don't want to spill the beans, so I'm going to save that for, I'm going to put a pin in that for now. But this is something where there's a lot of room for improvement here. It is valuable to do. You don't want to ignore the problems, but you also don't want to get so deep in the weeds with the problems that you are ignoring the good stuff and you miss some of that positive reinforcement that is, I think, way more motivating than negative reinforcement. Mm.
Yeah, gratitude's such an interesting one because, I mean, there's a lot of research that supports the idea that having a daily gratitude practice leads to improved happiness and improved productivity. So there's like a very utilitarian function to this. And for years, gratitude was something, one of those things I was like, I don't do a good job practicing gratitude. And so I need to have a formalized daily habit. And I did this for many years, a daily gratitude journal, where I'd sit down in the morning and write out 3 things that I was grateful for, and then sit and kind of like reflect on that. What I started to find was that like I was just going through the motions after a certain point, after a couple of years of this, it was just going through the motions and just bastardizing the whole approach to feeling gratitude. And instead of actually feeling grateful, I was really just checking a to-do. I was checking a box to say, oh, I did it. And I could feel good about the fact that I did it, but I didn't necessarily feel any more grateful or gratitude in my life. And probably around the time that we did this episode or in the last 2 years, at some point I realized like I was feeling worse about the fact that I wasn't feeling grateful, that I was like, well, what's the point of this then? Like if the net is that by trying to feel more grateful, but failing to do so actually makes me feel less good about myself, then I'm just going to stop trying. And instead, all I'm going to do is just focus on being present in the moment, whatever that looks like. And so instead of taking time to be grateful and be like, oh, you need to summon this emotional attachment to the gratitude that you have in your life, I just try to focus more on just be here in this moment right now. And making time for that has been way more valuable to me than feeling shitty about not feeling grateful.
Did you read some Eckhart Tolle around that time? Is that why?
Yeah, well, that would be an interesting one to look at because I did read The Power of Now sometime in the last probably 3 or 4 years. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if this was before that or after that, but it could have been during that transition where I was like, I need to find a better way. Cause this current practice of like trying to feel grateful, but then failing and feeling shitty, like just wasn't serving me. So
yeah, it's a good book. That could be your book record. We haven't given one in a while. I'm sure we've recommended it, but check it out.
Yeah. I wonder if we did an investor notes on this.
No, we didn't. We didn't.
If you're listening to this and you have not gone back, like about a year or two ago, we did a weekly segment of books that were
very that long. Has it?
Yeah. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. We did about 50 books, deep dives into books that had been very influential in our lives. And then we created infographics that we then put into a Dropbox folder. You can download them at invictusmultifamily.com/notes. You can go see all the sophisticated investor notes.
all the books that we reviewed. We also did podcast episodes, so you can go back, you'd listen to those. Highly recommend it, because books, very dense pieces of information, very great. Like you said, reading is great, but when you have a kid, it's harder to make time for it.
Tough.
And so that was our attempt to just try to distill the most meaningful nuggets from some of the most meaningful books that we've read.
Yeah, Cliff's Notes.
Cliff Notes.
Anyways, yeah. That was gratitude.
You had something that you put a pin in there.
Oh, remember that? Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. So my wife and I are a big fan of couples therapy. You know, some people think, oh, that's a bad thing, you guys are having problems. But we've always taken a very proactive approach with it. And I think any kind of like mental work you can do on yourself to kind of figure out, okay, what makes me tick? Why do I think about things the way I think about them? And, you know, getting control of emotions and things like that. And just kind of really unpacking like how your brain works has been really valuable for me. I've done it a bit on the investing side to help myself stay in the right kind of mindset for that. I've done it in my personal relationship with my wife. It always yields a good result. So I don't want to say therapy is the habit, but the habit of being aware of what's going on in your brain and why, I think is a good one to have. This could just be journaling, mm-hmm. But just kind of dumping like what's in your brain, why is it there? You know, what's in the going on in the background, in the subconscious? What do you think about yourself? Why? I think that's a very powerful habit. A lot of people aren't really into it. Maybe they don't want to see what's back there, or they think it's like, oh, that's something you do if you have a problem or you're broken. So I've always gotten a lot of value out of that kind of like mental unpacking mm-hmm. practice. I don't really know what to call it though.
Totally. I totally agree. Yeah. I'm going to circle back to that here in just a second. But the last one on this list is ditching the to-do list. And specifically, I think what we were talking about on this one was instead of creating to-do list, we talked about time blocking and creating implementation intentions where you sit down and you figure out, okay, when am I going to do what on my calendar the next day? And this has been like a massively helpful activity for me. The problem with it can become that if you are try to be too rigid with your calendar, then you start to have events kind of clash into each other and there's no flexibility for when life inevitably gets in the way. And so it is one of those systems that you got to kind of play with. But I found still for myself, like I still time block every day. And it's massively, massively helpful. But I think you experimented it and you were playing with it for a while and had maybe run into that issue of like over.
Yeah, if you, I think
scheduling.
For me, if I got too granular with it, it seemed counterproductive. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, like I'm the type of guy who wants to be like, okay, this is when I'm going to do this test. And I spent so much time trying to block the things out. I'm like, this is taking too much time. And so what I've done is I've just blocked out to-do list time. So I'll have my to-do list. And mm-hmm. what I do with that is, I think really important, is I identify the things that are like super, super important. And make sure that's what I do first. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this. I think we did one of those sophisticated investor notes on the one thing, which is kind of all probably, about yeah. this. Just identifying, okay, yeah, you've got 15 things on the list, but like, what are the 1 to 3 things that you got to get done today, no matter what? Like, focus on those. I still got the list to keep track of the things. And then instead of blocking out each task, I just throw, you know, a block of time that's called to-do list mm-hmm. on the calendar. And that's when I work on that stuff. And that's a lot more efficient. I don't sit there and nitpick like, oh, this is a 20-minute task, so let's make yep. this little calendar thing right here, and you can't even see this stuff. And
it's like too small.
Yeah. And then Matt was just...
One bathroom break throws that entire thing off then.
Exactly.
You're like, shit, yeah, I spent 20 minutes in the bathroom. Damn it.
Yeah, and I've seen some kind of AI stuff come out that I haven't tried it yet. I forgot what some... There's a few things that kind of take yeah. the list and try to do all optimize that rejiggering for you. I haven't tried it. Have you tried any of those?
I haven't, because I got to the same place that you did, which is like... There comes a point where you're trying to over optimize the thing, and you really just need to get to a more rudimentary system that's flexible and like adaptable. And so I do a similar thing where it's more large blocks of time for broad, like larger chunks of things.
Yeah. Like but the not don't like, bug me time.
Exactly. It's that's like, it. I'm going to carve out this time for this type of work and this time for this type of work. But what I do within those chunks, I try to leave it a little bit more variable.
Yeah.
And that's worked really well.
And sometimes you get through your list and you got some extra time. You just, I don't know, watch a YouTube video. Just do whatever the heck you want.
But. So now that we've gone through those habits that we shared 2 years ago, What would you say are, if any, are there new habits or habits that you've gotten rid of in that time?
I don't know. Out of the stuff we listed, I don't think there's anything that I've gotten rid of. There's things that have been modified, like the networking, like we talked about. The new thing I'd say that is kind of the mental work on yourself, whatever you want to call it. I'm not going to call it therapy, but mental work, personal mental work, maybe we'll call it that. That's a one that has been reincorporated. 2 years ago, I didn't have any of that stuff going on. I did prior to that. And then we, you know, stopped for a while. And then within the last 2 years, I've done it again with my wife. And then like a mental performance coach I've incorporated as well for like the investing type stuff, which has been great. And then I think auditing what I'm doing on a somewhat frequent basis, basically looking at like what's in this to-do list and does this all need to be here? Being way more cognizant of like, what is my time going into? And continually asking myself, does this need to be done? Does this need to be done by me? How important is this? That's kind of like a reoccurring habit that's, I don't know, maybe once a week, once a month, it varies. But that's a new one I would add to the list.
Nice. For me, I think in the last year, I've been, like my buzzword that I've been using in my journaling and just like throughout my life is to do less, but better. And when I looked at like all the habits and all the things that you could be doing, like those lists, they can get very complex and we can start to have like these really overly structured habits and routines. And for myself, what's been really effective has been to just try to strip that stuff down to the bare bones and say, what are the fundamental foundational things that I need to make time for and to prioritize? And what I came to was really, if I just do three things in my day, like everything kind of works out. And so the key is just to make time for those three things. And what I call that is just the learn, think, do time, where make time every day to learn something, make some time. And that's like filling up that curiosity tank. That's the reading, that's the podcasting, that's conversations with people. Making time to think, which is the journaling, the introspection, or taking time to take that information that you've collected and then do something with it. And then the final one is the doing time, which is actually like executing the most important things on your to-do list, right? And like if you take in, you know, 30 minutes every day for some learning and an hour every day for some thinking and then 3 to 4 hours every day for some doing, like you're generally going to be doing a lot. Like you're going to be doing pretty good. So that's been helpful for me, is just like decluttering all the different systems and things and just trying to strip it down to like, okay, am I making time today to learn, think, and do? If I do that, life's good.
Now, the thinking time, I'm curious. We did, I guess this is just one big commercial for those sophisticated investors, but we did one on The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham, and he talked a lot in that book about his thinking time, which I think is different than yours.
The way I'm using it, yeah.
Well, that's true, right? Because his was very
rigid. Yeah, that's a fantastic book, by the way, in that system. So when I use thinking time, what really it could be that. Like sometimes it is like a very highly formulaic sit down and journal in the Keith Cunningham vein. Sometimes it's just more simple, like sit and meditate for a bit and like sit with your thoughts and reflect, or go for a long walk or take a long shower. Make time for silence and space for thinking. So it just kind of depends. And this is where like the fluidity of the system has been very valuable for me. Instead of saying every day I need to sit down for an hour and do the Keith Cunningham thinking time, which is very strenuous. Some days you just need to go for a really long walk and just make space. No podcasts, no phone calls, just go make some space for thoughts to appear.
Yeah, I think if you've got a really specific issue that needs to be solved, that's where like the Keith Cunningham approach might come into play. But I don't think, I mean, that's like a high intensity workout. Like, do you need that every day? I don't think
so. And he doesn't even do it every day. It's a lot. Like that process, highly recommend it for people who are got big things that I need to work through, but it's intense. But yeah. And with all of that, like the learning, thinking, doing time, it's different every day. It's really just trying to say like, did I do something that falls into each one of those buckets? And if I had to add another bucket, it would be relationships. Like learn, think, do, relationship. Did you make time for your relationships, your friends, your family, your loved ones? And
that's another one I'll add there. It's not relationships, but it's travel. Making it a priority to book some trips with the family. Even if it's just like, you know, to a city up north that's like 3 hours away, which is a, you know, convenient day trip for us in this state, or if it's, you know, a tropical place or whatever, and trying to get multiple trips in per year with the family so you can really get that good family time that's not just kind of squeezed in between work and sleep. Mm-hmm. I used to be very much, I would focus too much on the cost of trips.
Yeah, they're expensive. And time-wise, yeah.
They're expensive, and that was what I got so hung up on. I was like, oh, okay, let's do a trip a year. That's reasonable. But then I realized, like, this is, like, really good quality time. Like, yes, it takes some time and it takes some money, but the value you get from the relationships that you have with the people that you go on those trips with is huge. So trying to make that a more frequent thing, which I've done a pretty good job of this year, that's something I want to keep moving towards and doing more of.
Have you ever read the book How to Die with Nothing or How to Die with Zero by Bill Perkins?
I think I've heard the name. I've never read it.
It's an interesting principle, which his whole thesis is like, why wait until you're old and decrepit to spend your money? Or if you're going to pass it on to your kids, why wait until you're old and tired? And they're probably old and tired too, to pass on your inheritance. And instead, how do you use your money to facilitate like a fantastic life in the meantime? And so one of his principles is like, give your kids their inheritance when they're 30 or 35 and they're in the prime area of their life to be able to use that money to maximum effect. And you're still alive to be able to enjoy it with them. And then your goal being like, don't die with millions in the bank that will then be passed on. Yeah. Because you just spent your entire life accumulating a thing that you never got any value out of. Like the value was realized after you died when you passed it on. So it's an interesting idea of like, okay, how do you pace it out so that you can get to that point where you die with zero? That's the tricky part, but
well, you got to figure principle. Out when you're going to die.
Totally. Yeah. But that's the interesting mechanic there, which is like these years, you know, with Coco growing up and where you're at with age wise, like these are the prime years to be traveling and having adventures and making memories and like doing all that stuff. Not when you're 82 years old and then your kid Coco is like 65 years old.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say we're close to prime time, right? Right now, a plane ride with a 2.5-year-old it's hit and miss. Liz just went to Nashville with her and grandma yesterday and they lucked out. She was great on that flight, but 2.5-year-old on a flight, I'd say when we get a little over 3 to maybe 4, maybe that's prime time when they don't have meltdowns. Well, I don't know. When do they stop having meltdowns on the plane?
I don't know. I ain't got one of those.
Right now you roll the dice. It's like, I hope this goes well.
I'm in my prime time. That's all I'm saying. Great. Nearly 40, hit my peak.
Are you peaking?
Done. I'm peaking.
Peaking out?
Yeah, this is as good as it gets. It's all downhill from here. So we shared a couple books here for you guys. Just to review, check out The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham, and then How to Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. So
One Thing?
And The One Thing by...
real estate guy.
The real estate guy. Who is that? Darren Hardy? No, that's...
He's got a brokerage after.
God, it's like the Keller? Biggest... Keller Williams? Gary Keller.
Gary Keller.
You got there. Wow. Nailed it. All right, guys and gals. So that's going to do it for us. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for being here. We'll catch you in the next episode. But until then... I got nothing.
Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Multifamily Investing Made Simple. If you enjoyed the show, could you do us a massive favor? Head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review. Your feedback, it means the world to us as it helps us grow and spread the word about multifamily investing. And don't forget, sharing is caring. So fire this episode over to any friends or family who you think could benefit from learning all about multifamily investing. Thanks, guys. We appreciate every single one of you, and we'll see you on the next show.